It's Tuesday, October 24th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central Podcast. And boy, I tell you what, folks, I got a weird story to tell you tonight. And hey, we got some great content as well, and a special announcement. Strap in, here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha, everyone, and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, and we're coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island in Honolulu, Hawaii. Hey everyone, how are you? And welcome to the show. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Got a couple of stories to tell you about, one that's going to creep you out a little bit, and of course a special announcement as well. Of course, if you are a long-term subscriber, we want to thank you for being part of the Ohana here, being part of the family. And of course, if you're checking the show out for the very first time, hey, thanks for being here, and welcome to the family. And of course, we want to make sure that you get over to geeknewscentral.com, check out all the great content over there. And if you get a chance, sign up for the newsletter. You can get signed up via the second column of the website. That'll get you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. Well, I tell you what, got two quick kind of stories to tell you about first before we get going into the content tonight. But, hey, you know, those of you that have been with the show for a while, you know that I've told you a couple of ghost stories here, right? Well, we had something happen last night that really freaked us out. Now, okay, I'll preface this with a little bit of a story about what happened before. About a year, maybe a year and a half ago, my wife was downstairs in the dining room. She was doing something on the kitchen table. I was upstairs in the office or here in the studio. And we have a picture that was hangs on the wall. It's got one of those nice special hooks that you buy specifically for hanging photos and stuff. And it also had on the frame itself one of those nice hooks. So, and it had been up there for months, and all of a sudden this thing falls to the floor, kabang, and it stays flat against the wall just like it had slid straight down. And there was just no way this thing could have gotten unhooked. There was no way that it could have been bumped by the kids. It just wasn't in a position to have had that happen. All right, so you can write that kind of off. Maybe that's kind of weird. That can happen, right? Well, the number two incident happened maybe a year ago. Yeah, well, I'll have to go back and kind of search for the show notes and get the exact time frame. But my wife and I were in the living room, and we were watching Chris Angel's Mind Freak. And it was the episode where he was getting buried alive in that coffin, and then they were filling it in with concrete or dirt or something. But I had told her, I said, you know, a couple of these guys have done this before and actually died. You know, some of these magicians had done this and actually died. But the second I said the word died, now over by my front door on the closet, there's one of these little stoppers so that as the door opens, it won't bang into the edge of the door into the wall. You guys know what I'm talking about? One of those little door stoppers. But it was at the top of the door, and on that was hung a little chime. So anytime you'd open that door, you'd hear a thing, ding, 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 ding. It'd make a little bit of a noise, make a little bit of a chime. Well, that door was closed, and all of a sudden, as soon as I said the word dead, this thing started ringing like someone had reached up and smacked it. It gives me chills down the back of my spine, even to this date that it happened, okay? So, all right, so that's the two freaky things, right? Now, we'd been told by some local Hawaiians, and we'd been talked to some people that basically you just tell whoever, you know, when this something like this happens, say, okay, hey, pretty funny, time to leave, and get out, you know? And you're supposed to explain yourself why you're there, blah, blah, blah. Well, we live a direct line between the Utah, which is a battleship that was sunk during World War II, during Pearl Harbor, the attack on Pearl Harbor and the Arizona Memorial. So we're in between those two sunken ships. You could pretty much draw a line through them, and they would be between, would go through where our house is. And so we'd always kind of attested maybe there's some sort of ghost action going on in there. But last night, my wife had went into town. She had went shopping, and it was getting pretty late. I was a little bit worried about what was going on with her, so I called her at about 9:15. I said, "Hey, where are you at?" She said, "Oh," she says, "I'm on the bridge. I'm coming across. I'll be home in a few minutes." I said, "Okay, cool." So I did not move. I was in the office, all right? I did not move. And she pulls up in the driveway, gets parked. She goes to the back of the car, opens up the trunk, and the garage door opens. Now, there's only two ways it can open. It's one of the remote controls, or someone pushed the button inside. I'm upstairs. The kids are upstairs and asleep. She thought when the door went up that I had pushed the button to help come out and help her carry stuff in. So she turned to look, and I wasn't at the door to the garage. She thought that was kind of strange. You know, how come the door's opening up and he's not there? So she walks into the house and with the first load of the stuff that she had, and she checked the bathroom. I wasn't in there. And she started yelling at me, "Well, that was very cool. You know, you open a garage door, and then you walked away, and I'm not being very nice." And I'm like, "Huh? What are you talking about?" Yeah. What in the world was that? Now, here's the thing that's really spooky, okay? My father, who passed away, always, when he was here and visiting, would always go out and help my wife carry stuff in. So I told her, "Well, maybe Dad opened the garage door for you." And she kind of got freaked out over that. But here's a third incident that we've had happen here. The garage door has never, ever, ever, ever opened up again. You think maybe someone in the neighborhood has a similar frequency, but it was just too coincidental. She opens the back door to the hatchback to the minivan, and the door opens, the garage door opens. So what do you think? Freak out city or what? Well, yeah. So my wife is like, "I'm not going in the garage." Okay, on a second note, my mom and I got some time today, and we record the pilot of the show we have initially kind of labeled the Sherry Cast. And you can find her show. This is the special announcement I was going to make. Over at CHERIECast.com. So CHERIECast.com. It's about 40 minutes. We'd only plan on going about 30, but you know how it is with me and trying to stick to a time schedule, right? Well, it's a little heavy. I will forewarn you on that. It's definitely not tech. And the show is, you know, it's going to be talking about real life, real people, real situations, dealing with being older, not being able to retire, having to work, dealing with older parents, just a whole plethora of things that affect people that may have maybe alone by themselves, or may be faced with taking care of an older parent and having younger kids, you know, obviously having grandkids in the house, so on and so forth. This is the first pilot. We kind of introduce some of the main characters, and we give you a little background and history. So if you want to check that out, it's going to be a work in progress. And if you've got some ideas on graphics for the site, or if you don't think the name matches what we're going to do, or you've got some insight on maybe helping us create a promo for it, we'd love to have some assistance with it. But Sherry Cast at CHERIECast.com. It's Mom and me having a little talk, and I hope you enjoy it. And I had fun making the first one with her. She was a little nervous at the very beginning, but after that, super trooper. She's good to go. I think we're going to have a very successful show with that, and I hope you'll tell everyone that you know about it. And it's going to be one of those. I think it's going to be good. I really, really do. I've got a feeling about it, but we'll see. All right. Anyway, this Saturday, upcoming Saturday, we're going to have our next live roundtable using GoToMeeting. Of course, it's the best web conferencing solution that I've found. And you're going to see how we demonstrate the application by handing it off between presenters. We're actually going to have some presenters that have never used the application before. So you're going to see how easy it is to do that. And, of course, we can record the meeting and email it to everyone. It's great for demos. Of course, what we use it for is training and using the drawing tools, et cetera. Really, really cool. So GoToMeeting integrates with many email and instant messaging apps so you can hold meetings instantly. And, of course, it's affordable. You have one flat rate, unlimited meetings at one flat rate. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. Along with that, what else have I got cooking here? We might as well take care of GoDaddy. Lots of good things going on at GoDaddy. Picked up 5 domains for mom tonight, and I used my Geek5 code, and I saved myself like, $6 or $7. It was pretty good because I got a good discount on the domains I registered. So if you're looking for some savings over at GoDaddy.com on web hosting accounts, domain auctions, whatever you may be picking up, make sure you use one of our promo codes. You can enter the code Todd to get 10% off on any order. Geek will get you $5 off on orders of $30 or more. And, of course, our great one that we're really pushing is Geek5, where you get an additional 15% off of your order of $20 or more. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. And thanks for both those sponsors for continuing to support the podcast here and, of course, the Tech Podcast Network. What have I got going here? I've got a whole bunch of stuff for you, and we're not going to go over an hour tonight, I promise. Famous last words, right? I do want to thank all the feedback that y'all have been sending, and do appreciate that. So let me get into content here. I'm waiting for the application to load. What's going on here? Load up. Okay. There's a article over on ZDNet. It's by David Berlin, and it's this is testing the power of the blogosphere. And he's doing a test. He was apparently found an iPod, a 5G iPod, really nice one, on a flight. And he's trying to find the owner of it via blogging about it. He tried calling Apple customer care to cross-check the serial number with the cross-check the serial number with their registration data, but he spent like an hour on the phone and couldn't get through to anybody. Their customer service must be dealing with their MacBook issues. But anyway, if you lost a black iPod or you know anyone that did, a 30 gigger between October 9th and 10th, David's got your iPod. So, and I'm sure somewhere out there, one of your buddies or friends are missing an iPod, and hopefully they're one of these audience members. So, a little social experiment here, and hopefully we can get this iPod back to the person it belongs to. All right, you guys know about DVD John, right? He's the guy that that cracked the DRM on DVDs, and he is starting a new company. And he's going to be liberating iTunes, whether Apple likes it or not. You know, this guy started out taking apart things apart, and very unusually, when he's 14, 15 years old, he is, doing code adjustments to cameras. And, of course, then he went to work when he was 15 and did the famous hack on DECSS, or actually wrote the program called DECSS. That removed encryption that limits what devices can play DVDs. Now he's getting ready to start a new company, or he has started a new company. It's called Double Twist. And he has been able to reverse engineer Fairplay, and it's the encryption technology used to make iPod a closed system. Of course, right now, when you buy something off of iTunes and you download it into your iPod, it's essentially locked in there, and it's very difficult. And not if you're a super geek, it's not that difficult. But if you're, if you're an average Joe, you can't move that music from any device. Of course, you can. The iPod obviously play MP3s if you have your own formatted MP3s. But he has reverse engineered Fairplay, so he's going to allow. Through some partnerships with some companies, he hasn't announced who they are, you can be able to take your content off the iPod and go to a different device. And it's not going to circumvent digital rights management, but it's going to make it so it's more usable so that you can do a lot more with your content. Now, I'm sure this is going to bring out the lawyers. And obviously, this kid is going to, or actually a young adult now, is going to be a thorn in Apple's side. And he has a very interesting quote that came out of Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs in 2002 in the Wall Street Journal said, "If you legally acquire music, you need to have the right to manage it on all other devices that you own," end quote. And as DVD John sees it, Jobs didn't follow through on his promise, so it's up to him to fix the system. Pretty cool, huh? Very, very interesting. So we'll see what happens with this company. We'll see if the Apple lawyers go after him with a vengeance. I would almost bet they would. But huge article in CNN Money. So it's not like this guy's hiding from Apple. But we'll see what happens. Now, here's an article that I found on CNET News. It's entitled "Public Blogs to Work for Wall Street." And I found this a little bit concerning. I guess I shouldn't, because it's to be expected. But there's a company called Collective Intellect, and their goal is to make bloggers work for the man. And essentially what they've done is they've created a service that combs through the thousands of blogs, news sites, chat rooms, the bulletin board forums like PHBB, every day, and then surfaces rumors and news reports that might be of interest to traders or corporate public relation executives. There's some other companies that do this. Of course, Technorati is one of the websites that it's publicly, but I believe this is a pay service where people have to pay to access it. And there's one other company called, I believe, Monitor. Let's see if I can find a link to it. Monitor 110 is another one. But what do you think about that? What do you think of they're taking, you know, I guess it's to be expected that they'll take our data and they'll parse it and they'll look for trends. I'd like to see some competition out there. I'd like to see some additional references, or actually, instead of just having Technorati, I'd like to have a couple of these systems that we can use publicly. I'd like to see these open, because I like to kind of dig for stuff as well. And when there's only a couple of choices out there, it makes you wonder what else you're missing. So we'll see what Collective Intellect puts together. And as soon as we get a chance to take a look at their website and find out what it costs, maybe I'll buy a subscription to it if I can afford it. And we'll do an in-depth review, and I'll let you know how well they track stuff. But this is a pretty good article by CNET News, so we'll keep you advised on what we find out. If you are a potential employee of Google, let's say you, and any of you that may be a Google employee. As a matter of fact, I want to do talk about this article, I want to give a shout out. I want to thank whoever it was at Google that hooked me up. I put a post on the blog and helped looking for info on getting the Google Apps approved, the actual application approved for rawvoice.com through Google Apps. I put that call out, and the next morning it was in my inbox. So if someone listens to the show or whoever's reading the site and you work at Google and you made that happen, hey, thanks so very much. I gave you guys you deserve all the glowing praise I can give you for that that service, because you definitely saved us a bunch of money, and it's definitely appreciated. But anyway, again, back to the story in the Wall Street Journal. Google is adjusting its hiring process. I guess they hire on average like 16 people a day at Google, but most of the employees that work there have went through an average of 5 to 6 interviews, significant interviews to get hired, with as high as some people going through as many as 13 interviews, with every employee, new employee's application going across the two of the two big mans at Google's desk. And they look at your GPA, and they go through this laborious process. And what's the experience out there for those of you that are working with tech companies? How many interviews did you go through before getting hired? Did you go through 5 interviews? Can you imagine having to go through 5 in-person interviews and taking, several months to get a job over there? What if you're unemployed? But I guess if the person's smart enough to be, you know, being interviewed over there, and they're looking at people that can move up because they're growing so fast, to move up 5 or 6 positions. So they hire at a certain level, then very quickly go up, get promoted 5 to 6 times. So that's why they're looking so deep at the people that they're hiring over there. But I guess now, see, what did they say? Looks like they had like 9,000. Oh my goodness, like 9,000 employees. I thought it was more than that. But now 9,378 at the end of the third quarter. But wow, that's a lot of people. That really, really is. That's a management nightmare right there. But shows you how they can roll stuff out as fast as they can. All right, how many of you are been following some of the cool stuff going on YouTube? I found a great video that was over there. I'm always into slow motion stuff. I like to see these cameras that run at super high speed, and they film like a bullet coming out of a gun or whatever it may be that they film at high speed. They've got this slow motion dragster start, and it's a high quality slow motion camera called the Megamo. It's capable of taping 1,000 frames per second, and it gives a super close view of what drag racing tires look like under full load, and it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. I think you guys will be shocked on how the dynamics on these wheels. It's a total geek thing. I'm going to guarantee you're going to look at the video 2 or 3 times, and you're going to say, how does that tire stay together? And the tire in question is a Goodyear tire that's on the back of a dragster. Very, very cool. So check that out. Link will be up in the show notes. All right, if you are looking to get a TiVo, a deal a day, TiVo with 1 year service, $125. There's a limited time promotion through the end of the month. You can pick up a new 80-hour Series 2 TiVo, including 1 year service for only $125. So a Series 2? Oh, this is a single head Series 2, it looks like. You're not going to get a Series 2 dual tuning model, which is a lot more expensive, but you know, it may be a good idea to get these new ones these ones that they're out now before these next ones are really rolling out on the shelf heavily, because they're somewhat compliant with next year's no NTS tuner without ATS tuner. So we will see what happens here, but what a great deal, $125, and you get 1 year of service included on that. Okay. And this came off of the ZatsNotFunny.com website. And I hadn't read this before. I found this via a link from someone else's site. I can't remember where I dug it out of. But I'm going to add this site to my read list, because it looks like they come out with some cool deals, or at least some review on some cool deals. There's a lot of discussion, heavy, heavy discussion. If you are into some serious talk about how hackers are now hacking different type of signals like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. If you're looking at how they're infecting systems and beating Wi-Fi, and it makes you wonder. I read through this thing, and I had to actually read it twice because of the heavy language in this. But if you're not using your Wi-Fi at home and you are in an area where someone can drive up to your driveway and you have a PC running, turn your Wi-Fi off during the day. Now, I have my Wi-Fi here on a timer now. Because my wife is home during the day, she uses it during the day, but usually she gets done with it 8 or 8:30. So I have it set to shut off at 9 o'clock so that she's downstairs using the laptop downstairs. She can come up here and flip the switch and get it on, but I keep it off all night until mid-morning whenever she's got it set to the time that she wants it to come on. But it's a good idea not to run your Wi-Fi all the time, especially if you're near a place where it's a lot of public traffic and it can be exploited. And there's another reason to turn it off too, and we'll talk about that here in a few moments. Remember about a month ago when that guy from the UK by the name of Richard Hammond wrecked that jet car, crashing it at 288 miles per hour? And he survived, and he was released from the hospital, I guess, today. And he said that when he was flipping over, He said, my very last thought was, oh, bugger, that's gone wrong. Well, we're going to check out now. And he said that when he flipped upside down, he says, I was upside down inhaling a field. My nose and eyes were full of earth. I'd gone plowing on my head. This is a very, very, it's kind of funny the way he reflects on the, you know, the he survived this and he walked away essentially unscathed. His brain got rattled quite a little bit, but you know, he's all none worse for wear. They're saying 100% recovery, and he said that he was aware of his brain saying, "We'll wave the flag," and that was the point that I passed out. Doctors use a point system: 15 is normal, 3 is flatline. As a 3, I was that close to being dead. So check this out, and it's very, very interesting to see this guy's response from his very close brush with death. All right, there's a ABC News technology and science article that says finding love on the internet, it works. And, you know, I know a lot of people that have found the loves of their life on the internet. And a lot of single men and women are using it to reach out to some of these different services where they do profiling and stuff and having great success. I know there has got to be someone listening to this show that has found either a girlfriend or has a fiance or has gotten married through someone they've met on the internet. And I'd love to hear how that happened. I'd like to know, you know, you call the voicemail hotline and just, you know, you don't even have to tell me who you are, but, you know, let us know what service you used and how it worked for you. Cause I know there are a lot of single guys that listen to this show and I'm sure they would be real interested in hearing the technique, or not necessarily the technique, but what services you use that worked well. So I'd love to hear from, you know, I had a friend that I dated when I was in high school. She had went through a pretty bad divorce, and her and I had talked quite a bit. We'd remained friends the entire time that, you know, since the time we had left, essentially since I had left high school. And she had used one of the online services and met a great guy, and they were just like, it was perfect. It was one of these perfect matches, and so it does work. I know that, and it worked for her, and she didn't think she would have any chance of finding a new husband, and it really worked out well for her. So if you went down that road, I'd love to hear what type of service you've used and how it all came about. But anyway, you can send those comments to either geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Okay, there's a new Mac Talk. There's a new Mac magazine. Oh, come on, computer, load this thing up. Okay, it's called Mac Talk. It's for the Australian Macintosh community, and it's online. So this is a cool thing. You can go out and download this thing. And it's going to be sold in stores in Australia as well, but they've got it online so you can download it. So it's called Mac Talk, the Australian Macintosh community, and they're saying that they did an initial print run of 10,000 copies, and it's available via select Apple resellers, but a good resource for you. And the best thing is it's free, okay? Free at the newsstand and free online. So let me know what you think about that, those of you that are hardcore Mac users. All right, I found a site today that almost looks too good to be true, and I'm trying to figure out what the catch is. MediaFire at MediaFire.com. Free file hosting made simple. Uploading 100% free. Unlimited file size. Unlimited uploads. No sign up required. Multiple simultaneous uploads. Easily email files after uploading. For downloading, 100% free, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited downloads, no waits, lines, or queues, multiple simultaneous downloads, supports most download managers. Someone, please, tell me, what is the scam? What's the deal? How are they doing this? I read through their terms of service. I read through their acceptable use policy. I can't figure it out. How are they doing this? MediaFire, MediaFire.com. I turned my team onto it already. I said, go look at this. Tell me what they're doing. How are they doing this? Now, you have to upload from your, you upload one file from my computer, so you have to upload it via the web browser. You can't FTP or anything like that. I did not create a free account on here. I should have. Maybe that would have gave me a little more of a clue. Maybe they have some added value services. But only time will tell. Let me know what you think about it. Okay, Engadget has, of course, this one, big news today. It was all over the place. Robert Scoble had some had a press release on it. It's actually got a video on it. Cisco has released this new thing. It's called a telepresence meeting. It does video meetings in Ultra HD. And when he saw it demoed, it looked to him when he walked into the room that there was actually people sitting all the way around a table. But instead, what it is you've got people on one side, and real people, and then you got these super high-def screens on the other that make, and it makes them look like, it looks like a real meeting, folks. 1080p flat panels. You can use 12 people can do this teleconferencing at the same time, but it's going to cost you $299,000. $299,000 when it's released. Oh my goodness. You know, I bet you there's a bunch of geeks out there. You know, first of all, if you get these big high-def screens, you put three of those together, see what you can get those for, about $3,000 each, and get the Sony 50 inches for, what, $3,000? So you put three of those together, that's $9,000. Then you buy some high-end webcams. That would be a couple $100 for some high-end webcams. Do some streaming technology and some regular phone lines. Guess what? And maybe a computer behind. I bet you geeks can build this a lot cheaper than what they have done. They said it was an amazing, just amazing video. It looked perfect. It looked like they were in a, you know, all around the same table. And it's just because of the way they got it set up. All you really care about is to see the person face to face, right? Why are you going to pay $300,000 for this? Someone give me $300,000. I guarantee you I can build a system that will be cheaper, much, much more cheaper for any company to roll out, and have enough money left over to buy everyone in this audience a latte. Oh, gosh. Give me a break. Anyway, you guys can check this out. It's been all the rage today, and a lot of people are asking how they're going to, you know, who's going to pay for this? Well, big companies will, because they, you know, big companies love big toys. All right, here's something that is very, very cool. BitTorrent clients coming to NASs and routers, PCLS downloads for all. Oh, yes, network attached storage devices with built-in BitTorrent clients are available today. And they're available via a multiple different types of, from different manufacturers. We've got one from Osis. We've got one from, gosh, they don't even say what companies they are. Planex, routers from Planex. Who else? The Osis and QNAP boxes will be available stateside with a TS-101 sporting eSATA interfaces for around $279. But if you want a network, you know, this means is, you turn your PC off, and your torrents are still going to be served through this box. Very, very cool. Now, I'm sure this is going to give the RIAA and MPAA some major, major headaches. And these things are portable. You can plug them in anywhere. Very, very cool. We will see what happens here. I'm sure that the lawyers are always trying to figure out how they can stop these things. But BitTorrent clients coming to NASs and routers, PCLS downloads for all. Go get them, $279, those of you that are hardcore BitTorrent guys. All right, you know, there's a store that I love to go shopping at, but they don't have them here in Hawaii. It's called Fry's. How many of you have been in a Fry's? It's primarily, most of the stores are in California. I do think they've got them other places in the United States, but you got to be near a big city to get to one. They are it's like geek heaven. I used to go to the Fry's. I used to have to go to Campbell, California, which is right next, essentially in the valley. and San Jose area, and I used to go to the Fry's in there, and that was, I could go in there and spend like 3 or 4 hours and probably spend $3,000 or $4,000. You know, you'd go in there and you would definitely do some damage to a credit card. But they have never had an online shopping site. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, Fry's has introduced an online shopping site. I can't believe it. I'm totally stoked because they get deals at times that no one else can. Now, it's not always that way, but they do some great stuff. Now, they've got some grand opening sale going on. They've got some 17-inch widescreen notebook for $7.99. They got some 15-inch LCDs for $89. They got some 1 gig Extreme 3 MSPD memory sticks for $34. They got Vegas Movie, which is a Sony product, for a penny after a rebate. They've got Emperex MP 10003. It's a personal MP3 player for $14.99. Buy 10 of those and give them away as gifts. Little MP3 players. Just matter of fact, I'm going to order some and give them away on the show. I'll order them right as soon as the show is over. They got some Olympus W10 voice recorder cameras. Totally awesome. Just some cool stuff. And Fry's, man. Check it out. I really like their store. I really do. I wish we had one here. Fry's, come to Hawaii, please. Okay, those of you that are Twit fans, well, I know there's a number of you on this that listen to the show that listen to Twit. There's some serious concern out of from Leo Laporte that he released yesterday. And bottom line is they did not have a show on Sunday. I guess a couple of the members did not show up, and Leo's off to play hooky. He's going on a cruise this coming week, and he'll be gone through November 4th. So 2 weeks in a row, no Twit. And he says, I'll decide what happens to Twit the show when I come back. But at this point, it looks like it's on life support and the heart monitor's flatlining. This is not good. A lot of comments. There's even a website started to say Save Twit Podcast. I think Leo's got some sponsors right now for this thing, too. What does that mean? You know, he does so much stuff. Probably the people he's working with are stretched pretty thin. Takes a lot of work to do a show every week. It really, really does, especially when you're trying to, you know, rely on getting four people together. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. We'll see what happens there. You know, I'll be honest, I listen to it when someone sends me a link to something cool, but I don't usually listen to the show. But I know many of you do, but we'll see what happens there. All right, there's a new site out called MyBlogLog, mybloglog.com, and it's a kind of a social site for bloggers and where members or people that it's basically a social site for blogs. As we built a social site for podcasting over at blueberry.com, blubrry.com, MyBlogLog is for bloggers. And cool little site. And we'll see how well it takes off, but it's gotten some good reviews today. Or any of you that work for Enron, you'll be happy to know that their CEO got 24 years in the federal pen. I guess he's going to be going someplace that makes license plates and that kind of stuff. So he'll be working it for a few pennies an hour, but he's got 24 years to think about the money that he lost people in their pension funds all over this country. So 24 years is what he got for his mismanagement of that company. In the science news, Progress launched the International Space Station. A Progress cargo spacecraft was launched on a mission to ISS on Monday. And the spacecraft is carrying 2.5 tons of food, water, fuel, and other supplies for the three-man Expedition 14 crew. And the spacecraft is scheduled to dock with the International Space Station on Thursday, so at 10:30 Eastern Daylight Time. So I'm sure that'll be on NASA TV when that goes down. There's a very interesting article over on hosted.ap.org talks about how net neutrality could be affected by the upcoming election. And they're talking about how if the Senate goes back to the Democrats, what could possibly happen with net neutrality and how some of these big companies are worried about it. Don't want to get into the political discussion here one way or the other, but it is a very interesting read on how Senate positions would possibly change and what would be the end result for some of these bills that have been stuck or held up, you know, because of the shift, what would get through and what wouldn't. Generally, I believe some of the Democrats have been in support of net neutrality. I don't know what the voting record, of course, on all of them is. I know what mine is. I'm not real happy with the voting record of my senator, and I vote absentee ballot in the state of Michigan. So we will see what happens here with this upcoming election, but it'll definitely make for some interesting talk one way or the other. Again, I don't want to get into the political side of things, but it is a good, they're, you know, they're kind of already reflecting on what could or may happen, depending on how the election falls. So main thing is, I don't care what your party affiliation is, and just get out there and vote. That's the main thing. And if you don't vote, you don't have a right to complain. My absentee ballot did go in the mail. Okay, Microsoft opened up its email technology to fight spammers. Well, this is kind of interesting because in 2004, Microsoft introduced Sender ID, and you know, Bill Gates predicted that thanks to Sender ID, spam would be wiped out by 2006. Well, I'm looking at the amount of spam Google caught over the last 72 to 96 hours, and it was about 5,000 spam messages that they caught. It did not make it into my Outlook inbox. Thank you. I'm just, whew, it's a beautiful thing. But anyway, what Microsoft is going to do is they're going to open up Sender ID. They had a patent on this, and they're going to essentially allow companies to implement this without fear of being hammered by Microsoft. So they have the move will make it possible for anyone to build email system that use Sender ID without a license, with a irrevocable promise under the OSP that Microsoft will not sue the implementer for any patent violations. Very, very cool. We'll see if anyone does on this. There's been a lot of different alternate ideas on what they can do to kind of firm up the issues with, you know, making sure that when an email comes, you call back and you get a verification. It's kind of a cross-check system. But those of you that are fighting spam, it's good news for you. All right, the Apple iPod turned 5 today. And obviously no other media players come close to its success. And since its launch in 2001, and the question is, where will the iPod go in the next 5 years? And I'm kind of predicting that, you know, the iPod's cool, but there's a lot of cool stuff. If you watch some of the major review sites, it talks about some of the new gear and some of the new players and some of the new video stuff that's coming out. I'm telling you, Apple, I don't care, just by the sheer volume of stuff coming out, is going to have competition. So, but anyway, iPod turned 5, and there was some real cool links on one site that I saw that kind of showed the progression of the iPod and how it's went over the past few years. Speaking of the iPod, there's a new application out called MCE Tunes. It's used with the Windows Media Center, and you are going to be able to play Apple iTunes purchase tracks in Windows Media Center using MCE Tunes. It's $30. So those of you that have a Windows Media Player, this is a great plugin to buy, and it's going to allow you to, you know, access your iTunes music via the media player. So those of you that are current media player users, jump on that, and I'm sure that you're going to get major use out of that. There was a survey done by ZDNet. Actually, it was done by Parks Associates, who discovered that 13% of internet users currently downloading movies using peer-to-peer service said they would pay $20 per film to do it legally. 18% of those downloading TV shows would pay $5. At lower price, the numbers are even larger. 38% of the people currently using peer-to-peer services would pay $5 for a movie. 47% would pay 50 cents for a TV show. If I could get, if I could download a DVD quality movie, in other words, I could get the full download where I could burn it to a DVD and play it on my player using peer-to-peer, I would happily pay. I'm not going to pay $20. We're downloading that stuff through my broadband connection. All right? I'm not going to pay $20 for it. I'd be happy to pay $10. They have no packaging. They don't have any shipping. Nothing. It's just a download, right? And we're using peer-to-peer, so the bandwidth overhead is very low. I'd be even willing to pay for a monthly service to get movies like that. You know, X number of movies for X dollars per month. We watch a lot of movies here. I got four kids. I can't afford to go to the movies. You guys been to the movies lately? So this is a very interesting survey. Now imagine you're sitting at home. You're on the computer playing around. Your wife's watching TV. And all of a sudden, your door gets busted in and it's the FBI. And they're there to do a raid because the IP of the computer that you have through your internet service has been linked to child porn. But turns out that when they busted your door down, the IP was mistaken and that the cable operator gave the wrong address where this activity was taking place. Well, this has happened a couple of times, but, you know, there's been a lot of, these people that are doing this need to be found and locked up. But at the same time, imagine them coming into your house and you being falsely accused. Well, a lot of this could be a result, you know, and you could be charged with a crime for doing something that maybe you didn't do when you had your Wi-Fi not locked down or your Wi-Fi got hacked. That's why I'm telling you, when you're not using your Wi-Fi device, make sure you shut it off. And that includes the Wi-Fi on your computer as well. You know, I'm being a little bit overcautious here, but, you know, stranger things have happened. You know, some weirdo pulls up outside your house, connects to your open Wi-Fi port, and he goes and does something that tags your IP as being a downloading kiddie porn. Not a good thing. So, but sadly, this couple in Kansas were completely innocent, but at the same time, the police, you know, put them on the ground, put their handcuffs on them, you know, hauled their gear away, and they had to, you know, go through the indignation of this type of an event. So, you know, just be careful out there, folks, and secure your stuff, okay? There's a good Washington Post article up, says A Messy Age for Music, and it talks about how bad it has gotten with the DRM stuff, and talks about how it's not interchangeable, and how just how it has gotten so absolutely ugly, and talks about people with huge, huge libraries that have not been able to be converted, and it's just ugly, and so they're trying to make some heads or tails of this, but you know, for anyone that's spending a lot of money on music, I feel sorry for you, because let's say you go out and spend $100 to fill, or let's say you spend $1,000 to put 1,000 tracks on an iPod. You know, if you want to move that music legally, you're going to have to go out and spend another $1,000 to move it to a different device, because you can't. And they make the analogy, it's like spending $10,000 on 8-track tapes in 1978. You're going to be super bummed when it comes to 1990, because guess what? Those 8-tracks are not going to be any good. So what happens today, the music you bought for your iPod today, you've spent a lot of money buying tracks, and 10 years from now, you can't use that content anymore. It could happen. It does happen. A lot of us have paid. I know I got Boston Live. I've got it on vinyl. I've got it on a CD. I've got it on vinyl. I've got it on a cassette. I've got it on CD. And I purchased it online and downloaded it. I paid for it 4 times. How many times have you paid for music? All right. So the Washington Post kind of goes after this a little bit and breaks it down in a good way. All right, got a last couple of articles here. One that I really was surprised about. Apparently, YouTube gave user data to Paramount lawyers. The video sharing site recently purchased by Google has been keeping tabs on users' personal data and sharing some of that identifying info without users' awareness. Responding to a subpoena served in May by Viacom subsidiary Paramount Pictures, YouTube handed over the data of at least one user to the movie studio's lawyers. On May 24th, for Viacom Incorporated, Paramount's picture convinced a federal judge in San Francisco to issue a subpoena requiring them to hand over the data. And very shortly later there, the individual was sued by Paramount. So you don't think that people aren't being gone after for you know, putting copyrighted information up on GooTube or YouTube. So we will see what happens here with this. But, you know, you put your user data out there and you put up copyrighted material, don't be surprised what you get in the mail. And there's a, finally tonight, there's a good article, former FCC chairman shills against net neutrality. But there was a great response written by Larry Lessig, has written a really a scorching response to former FCC chairman William Kennard's New York Times op-ed slamming net neutrality. Kennard now is a shill for a bunch of the companies he used to regulate. So this guy is no longer an FCC chairman. So now he's working for these companies that are pushing for the right of telcos to discriminate against network services that don't pay protection money for a guarantee that their packets will be delivered to customers who ask for them. And I'm reading this straight off Boing Boing, and this is here's what Craig Newmark put it. It would be like calling Joe's Pizza and having the phone company tell you that since Joe hadn't paid for guaranteed connections to you, that you'd have to wait 3 minutes before they'd put the call through. But you can talk to Domino's operator right now if you'd like. That's a great analogy. So I'm going to put this link up to this Boing Boing article. Very poignant, very straightforward on what's going on with the net neutrality fight. A lot of you have sent me back, said, oh, this net neutrality is not a big thing, Todd. Don't worry. It is a big thing, folks. You should worry. Okay, I've got one voicemail tonight. I haven't even played it. I didn't pre-queue it. So let me queue it up here. There it is, that double click. All right, here we go.
Hey, Todd, this is Sal from New York. I was listening to your podcast about the virus found in the iPods, and you're saying that Apple was getting, I guess, cheap marketing time out of it. And I think, you know, as a Mac basher that you've been the entire time, I think you were taking some cheap shots at Apple as well. All they did was report it. It's a virus that infects Windows, and unfortunately, Windows has viruses and Macs do not. And it's sad that you find every opportunity you can to bash Apple and Mac products, yet you still use it. I don't know what you do with a MacBook Pro. I think that's way over your needs. I think Mac Mini would be fine since you don't know what your needs are on a Mac. And, you know, you continue this sort of thing, you're going to lose a lot of pod listeners that, use the Mac platform.
Well, okay, here's the deal. Mac, Apple put... in their manufacturing process, they had an error. They had a QA fault where a virus got onto an iPod. They shipped those to customers. Customers used those, and they got their computers infected with the virus. Okay? So, Apple puts out a statement. Here's the statement they put out. The iPod Nano, iPod Shuffle, and Mac OS X are not affected. And all video iPods now shipping are virus-free. As you might imagine, we are upset at Windows for not being more hardy against such viruses, and even more upset with ourselves for not catching it. You know, what kind of a statement is that? Is that a statement of, like, we're sorry? That is not a statement that we're sorry. That's an absolute cheap shot. In the whole community, I saw at least 9 comments against, even Mac users were saying, that was a cheap shot. Okay, when the over in Japan, when there was an issue over there, they very simply said, hey, we messed up, we'll replace them. You know, here's the software you need to fix your the virus that we included on this promotional MP3. We're sorry, we're sorry, we're sorry. Okay, hey, I've got a Mac, I've got 2 Macs. I got a Mac Mini. And I have a MacBook Pro. I use the MacBook Pro for doing HD video editing and some other things. I know very well what the Mac is capable of doing. But as I've said all along, a computer is a computer is a computer. They all have different functions. They do different things well. I record the show on a PC because it's easier for me. I don't have to do multiple steps to get an MP3 file out of it. Okay, I don't have to use GarageBand like some people do and have to go 2 steps to get an MP3 file. Okay, there's obviously other applications out there, but I have Button and I use Windows software. That's, hey, it's part of my production line right now. I don't have to change anything. Why do I want to go out and spend more money? But I do recognize that the Mac is very simple to use in doing video editing. And my wife has been converting all of the videos that we've shot over the last couple of years and doing that process is on the MacBook Pro. Mac Mini, I guarantee the Mac Mini I have sitting on the desk here will not do that. It's not got enough horsepower. It's underperformed. Maybe the new IBM ones, the chips one, but I've got one of the old original first Mac Minis. So why would I want to go out and buy another Mac Mini? That was kind of ridiculous. So, hey, you know what? I'm an equal opportunity basher. I bash on Windows stuff every day of the week. So I don't understand why there's an issue with me going after Apple when they have a problem. Anyone that listens to this show for any amount of time knows that I go after both operating systems equally. Matter of fact, I probably go after Windows 10 times as much as I do a Mac. It seems to me Mac users are super, super sensitive to anything that's ever said about their operating system. I can take it. I can take what's going on with Windows stuff. I know that they are capable of getting viruses. I run a spy sweeper on here. I run a virus protection application. All right. Do I run that on the Mac? Nope. Okay. We all know that. That's a fact. That's the way life is. Okay. But if Mac, you know, if they were so, you know, they put Parallels and you can run Boot Camp on the Mac. Now, matter of fact, I've got Windows installed on the Mac. And some say it works just as good. Well, I beg to differ. The performance isn't as good, but you can do stuff acceptably on the Mac with it running in Parallels. So, you know, I'm going to call companies out when they make mistakes. I'll call Windows out when they make mistakes. It's only fair, you know. But it was an absolute cheap shot. Everything I saw on all of the talk forums, everywhere is like, wow. At least they didn't have to do their little cheap shot in there. As you imagine, we are upset at Windows for not being more hardy against such viruses. In the same paragraph, they add in here that Mac OS X is not affected, and all video iPods now shipping are virus-free. Did they have to put that in there? They didn't. They really, really didn't. And when one of the top VPs at Microsoft come out and say, hey, Apple, what's up with that? It wasn't just me. Okay. All right. I've spent enough time on that. I'm sure that's going to generate some responses. But just remember, I'm an equal opportunity smackdown. I'm an equal opportunity praiser. Okay. Give me something good to talk about. I shared with on the last show some great applications to use with the Mac. Right. So I give you the positive and the negative. Find something about Linux that's not good. We'll talk about that too. All right. You guys are with Max. Chill out. Take it a little easy, all right? All right. And if you want a complete Mac Pro show, go listen to the Mac Pro shows. If that's all you want to listen to is to hear stuff talk about Mac and people that does nothing but praise them, then fine. That's cool. I already got an email from Eric. He says, I was listening to your podcast the other week and heard you're talking about Meebo. The reason why so many people use Meebo.com for instant messaging is because it works at most companies that usually block instant message clients. My company won't let users install any software, so it's good to have Meebo for chatting during the day if you don't get caught. Another benefit is that if it only looks like one web hit to people that are monitoring the internet, the IT department, so you can leave it open all day. It's a pretty cool application for work, but I still use Trillion at home for all my instant messaging. Thanks, Eric, for that. I do appreciate your feedback on that. That solves the problem. Got an email from Wendy. Says, hey, Todd, I love your show. Would you please reconsider using the term podcast? I have two friends who saw my iRiver MP3 player attached to my belt loop and asked, what's that? I said, I listen to tech shows recorded from the internet. They didn't understand. Then I said, podcast. They had heard of the term, but instantly wanted to know what kind of iPod I had. I explained, but they still insisted that I must need an iPod to hear podcasts. I had been considering getting a Mac for my next computer, but now I see that Apple is the same as Microsoft, just not as successful. All right, Wendell, thanks for that. And, you know, consider getting a Mac. Don't discount the product. You know, it's a good PC, just as good as Microsoft. So, But we're going to, I am going to continue to call it a podcast. But what you got to do, Wendy, is you got to educate them, okay? Get out there and educate them and spread the word and make people understand, hey, it's called a podcast. It's portable on-demand broadcast. And if you say that, then people may give you a strange look, and that'll be a segue into a conversation in order to kind of explain what podcasts are. I got an email from Jeff that says, roll your own customized searches. Here are the steps for doing this. It's providing IE7's ad search provider, and it's basically via some information on Microsoft Windows website. And he also talks about how to use IE7 as a podcast receiver. And he goes in to say, this is pretty darn easy to set up. You'll be using IE7's built-in RSS feed reader for this. After subscribing to a feed containing podcasts, press Control-Shift-J to open an Explorer bar listing your subscribed feeds. Right-click on the feed you wish to have audio or video files downloaded from and select Properties from the pop-up menu. Check Automatically Down Attach Files. Click OK. IE7 stores these files as temporaries in your Documents and Settings folders, but you need not worry about navigating to it. In order to access your podcast, just click the View Files button in the aforementioned window. It's not as slick as a real podcast receiver such as Juice, but it works in a pinch. Thanks, Jeff. Put these notes up tomorrow in an additional post, but thanks for your info on that. Got an email from Nick. He says, GoDaddy.com's founder and CEO Bob Parsons posted a blog announcing, and among other things, the latest GoDaddy commercials, both featuring the GoDaddy girl Candace Michelle. You can watch commercials at GoDaddy by clicking the link in Mr. Parsons' blog. Thanks for that link, Nick. Do appreciate it. Got an email from David, and this is a great article that came in via an informant mailing list, and I'll try to put the link up to the mailing list that it came from, but it talks about vulnerabilities when you're in hotels and how absolutely it's just you must, whenever you are on travel or in a hotel and you're connected to a public network, make sure you've got a firewall running. If you don't, you're asking for big, big trouble. Got an email from David. Oh, David, I didn't get your stuff queued up. It'll have to be in a later show. But Paul, my good friend Paul from New York, who is a hardcore Mac user. Paul, thank you very much for sending me the FTP client recommendation to use a Yummy software versus Transmit. So thanks for that, Paul. And I know that you're going to get a kick out of my little tirade here tonight. I guess that's it. I think that's all I've got for tonight. And we're an hour and 2 minutes. We went over. Sure enough, I guess my yakking about the Macs pushed me over. But hey, feel free to call the voicemail hotline. Fire away, 619-342-7365. We can have a very nice open discussion about this stuff, and we don't have to, you know, don't take it personally, and just don't shoot the messenger. Well, I am the messenger. 619-342-7365, and of course the email to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. We'll be back with you on Friday. Thanks for being part of the family, and all you Mac users, stay subscribed and stand by and listen to me bash Microsoft as well. So until next time, take care. Aloha.